You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I love you not getting the joke in the group text last night.
Me?
There was one joke you didn't get, wasn't there?
Wait, what was it?
By the way, thank you for blowing up my fucking phone immediately after
Mike
that
said
loss.
Best two words in sports. I said game nine. She went all marbles.
thank you. Thank you.
And then she goes, oh.
I was kidding, Stuka. I was like,
Listen, okay, I'll give it to you. Because there's a million times where I've done stuff like that. And I'm like, hey, I was joking around.
It was a joke. Stugatz, I fell asleep during the third quarter of the Knicks game, and then the Knicks went on that, like, what was it, like a 15-point run or something like that?
It was great.
And I woke up, and they won the game. It was amazing.
That's a good feeling. I had that with the Jets and Dolphins Monday night game. Jets were down by, like, 1,000 points at halftime, and then I went to sleep, woke up, they won the game. That was a fun game last night. That was so much fun. By the way, I had to flip my phone over when you guys were, like, the group text was going because I was watching it on delay.
Oh, no, it's like, honestly, watching sporting events with friends, particularly in the streaming era, like if like a game is on ESPN Plus or Peacock or whatever, Paramount Plus, now they all have big sporting events, it's impossible to watch games with friends, to watch games on Twitter. If you follow someone who's reporting from the stadium, they like will tweet something that happened in the game 45 seconds before you see it. It's terrible.
The lengths you have to go to tape a game and watch it even an hour later in this day and age is insane.
No, you have to completely disconnect.
You have to turn your phone off. Yeah. That's it.
Honestly, I'm like getting towards that stage anyway because I find that I spend more time looking at other people talking about the game that I'm supposed to be watching than watching it myself. So I'm kind of like getting to that place anyway, but it's hard to double screen.
I love what sports radio shows are doing today, Dan. They are trotting out Derek Harper. Spike Lee is calling in to every single show. You have callers calling in to the morning show on ESPN saying they were actually at the game when Willis Reed limped out. I mean, this is amazing. What a day.
The narcissism of New York, the volume of New York makes all of this stuff better. It really does. Because the reaction in New York yesterday, Stugatz, you can, right? You can, even as a Knicks fan, right? Do you get swept up in it or do you laugh at how ridiculous it is to celebrate a victory like that way? A 1-1 tie in the first round
against the Hawks
stops traffic.
Big win. I mean, must win.
Stops traffic in the streets of New York with no perspective whatsoever. And of course, the next day, let's celebrate a championship on ESPN Radio. Let's call in and talk about the time that Willis Reed limped onto the court in the 1960s.
I wanted to call in. I mean, I wanted to talk about Starks in those teams, Dan. I do. Normally, I would be with you and I'd say it's ridiculous. But coming out of a pandemic and seeing that scene and seeing how happy people were just to be out doing something, high-fiving each other, watching the Knicks in a big game win a game. It was pretty fun.
The Willis Reed game was in the finals.
Yeah,
it was. It was not 1-1 in the first round against the Hawks.
I understand.
A 4-5.
Yeah.
And it can be both things. It can be an enthusiasm that is contagious and fun and laughter that echoes across the eternities because it has no perspective whatsoever. Spike Lee's got to get on the phone and call ESPN to talk about how great it is to be a Knicks fan when it's never been actually that great to be a Knicks fan.
They were chanting, "We want Brooklyn." I mean, it's unbelievable. I love Knicks fans.
My favorite part, like, is the kind of myopia that takes over amongst fans. For example, like, to make it local, the Florida Panthers are in this series against the Lightning, and all the Panthers fans are going, our crowds are so much better than Tampa's. Well, it's because they've gone to the Stanley Cup Finals, like, 3 out of the last 5 years. They've won the damn thing. They actually know what it's like to be in important games. For us, being 3-1 down at home and trying to, you know, make this massive comeback is the greatest thing that's ever happened to Panthers fans.
One of the things that I love about the Knicks story as the 2011 Bulls take out the Hawks last night, and really were smothering in the second half in a way that stopped the Hawks from being able to score, Danilo Gallinari and that Mohawk. How long has he had that Mohawk? Because I did not see a lot of Hawks games.
I think it was at the beginning
year.
Of this series. Yeah. I think it was an introduction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you end up taking out the Hawks last night, but I prefer sort of the macro storytelling of the entire decade, Stugatz, where the Knicks are totally irrelevant. When you, one of the things I shouted in the original rant when LeBron and Wade and Bosch got together, welcome New York to another decade of irrelevance, and it has been that for an entire year. But what
you nailed it.
What I that wasn't an I told you so. It was more to put you back in the place where Derrick Rose was when he won the MVP, because he wasn't LeBron, because he was the guy who didn't create a super team, took an MVP from LeBron because he was the humble superstar and all this mythology that we're talking about, who didn't need a TV show to tell you about his decision. He was coming for everybody, and he wouldn't recruit anybody, he said, because he didn't believe in the idea of super teams. And he has gotten churned to death, his knees by that coach, by all the super teams. This decade has had him all over the league. And now his tattered remains carry the Knicks because Julius Randle is your superstar. And now you want the Nets. You want that super team so you can go at it with the tattered knees of Derrick Rose, who has been ground down by the decade of me super team basketball.
Those knees had 39 glorious minutes left in him last night. Thibs saved 39 glorious minutes of Derrick Rose's knees, particularly for that moment last night. It was great. You had to feel good for Derrick Rose. He started him in the second half. I mean, Randle wasn't very good. Derrick Rose is a veteran on that team. It was a great moment for him.
Actually, help me with this, Jessica, because you say you have to feel good for Derrick Rose. And the last time we were talking about Marv Albert, Jessica was like, no, there's some stuff there that makes me not feel so good about Marv Albert, because there's some separating of art and artist that I can't do when I see certain things in someone's past. You said you have to feel good for Derrick Rose. Do you, Jessica?
I've become like the go-to, actually, this is problematic guy. But I think Derrick Rose, like a lot of athletes, has a really complicated history, and I don't necessarily feel good for him. I don't really feel anything for him. I used to be a huge Derrick Rose fan. Actually, I had a Derrick Rose poster in my bedroom growing up. He was like the guy in Chicago, right? But I have complicated feelings towards him. The things that he's been through on the basketball court, I think, are impressive, and he's overcome a lot injury-wise playing basketball. But in his personal life, which is, you know, where the rape allegations and him not knowing the word consent and the jury in his trial, a jury member taking a picture with him after he was cleared, those things are really hard to parse through. And I think it's hard for me to be like, yeah, I feel great for this guy. Like, he's amazing. He's been through so much. Good for him.
That is a complicated set of feelings. You're in the middle of New York. This is a feel-good story in New York, led by that guy who has been all around the league, and we have seen him age. All of us have seen him from superstar athlete to two or three times a game. He can now do one of those things near the rim that he used to do all the time to win the MVP. But you had his poster on your wall, and you're at the center of all of that. And when you say complicated relationship with Derrick Rose, I'm actually interested in parsing through those particular feelings, because how do you go from poster in the wall to taking that poster down? Because the details on some of this stuff are pretty horrifying.
It was horrifying. And also it happened at a time where I think I was in college, or it might have been like later on in high school, the rape allegations. And I was confused about what to believe then. I was someone who read a lot in the media, and a lot of the media coverage was very complimentary towards Derrick Rose, I felt at the time. So I wanted to believe all of those things and believe that it was extortion or that it was bullshit or whatever. And having revisited that now, knowing what I know about sexual assault accusations and some of the details in the case, just as an older, more educated person on the topic, like, it's pretty horrifying stuff. And so I think when you talk about the things he's overcome, you have to focus on the things he's overcome playing basketball and not him as this amazing whole person, this whole success story. Like a lot of athletes, he's a complicated character.
Can we tie this back to some of the stuff that we were talking about a second ago when it comes to journalism and mythology making? You do understand in the way that these things are consumed, we get such a partial view of some of these athletes, but now we get to see more and more than we've ever been, as we've got more of a connection in a lot of different places to each other and to the lives of these guys that they don't necessarily want us to see. What she's saying there about what Derrick Rose was presented to us as, because he wasn't LeBron, he wasn't greedy LeBron who had to do an ego-soaked television show because he needs attention. But LeBron doesn't have any of this
no.
in his past. And Derrick Rose was fed to us as somebody, a grinder, a worker, doesn't say very much. We started filling in the mythology around him because he was a terrible interview. Like a terrible interview. He's got no energy and he doesn't say much of anything that's interesting.
I'll do it myself. Come to me, otherwise I'll do it myself. That was Derrick Rose.
And Derrick Rose had a mythology around him that was, through business, through the marketing machine, through media, through not being LeBron, that presented one version to us. And now a largely male audience watches him for the Knicks as a comeback story. As where's he been? He was in Detroit for a while. He was in Minnesota. Yep. How many teams has Derrick Rose played for after winning the MVP in 2011? And it is a feel-good story athletically. That can't be disputed, correct? Athletically,
that's the feel-good
story. On the court,
yes.
If we could keep it to just on the court, you could celebrate the story of Derrick Rose. But today, more than ever, Stugatz, after the Me Too movement and everything else, it doesn't stay on just the court. And what New York is celebrating at the center of it is a guy with a resume off the court that's super problematic.
No doubt. And that's, it's tangled. And he's played for six teams, by the way. This is his second time with the Knicks. Derrick Rose has bounced around a little bit, so.
It's just been amazing to me to watch the entirety of the story, because you've gotten to see over a decade Derrick Rose get old. He was all fast twitch muscle fiber. He was somebody who came into the league and he was quicker than everyone else.
You're making really good points, both you and Jess. Like, it's a tangled mess, because Barkley was talking about what a great kid Derrick Rose is, and you have to feel good for him. And I remember saying to my wife last night, we were watching the end of the game in the post game, in bed, and I remember saying to her, man, Charles has to be careful there. Like, he's got some stuff in his past. And this morning, I'm listening to the ESPN morning show, and they're talking about making a 30 for 30 about Derrick Rose. It's like, whoa, right? I cringed a bit.
Stugatz, you just got done saying that you felt good for Derrick Rose and that we had to feel good for Derrick Rose.
From a basketball perspective, Dan, if you just put it on the
game. Stugatz, you stole
some of my finest work.
You stole your Charles Barkley, you have to feel good for Derrick Rose. You didn't have any of these questions. You developed them over the last 10 minutes listening to me just talk.
I just said
you're
I did.
You're full of shit all the time.
I am.
Have you ever wondered if Chet Holmgren might be a descendant of Abraham Lincoln? Or if a UFC fighter could beat an alien in a fight? You might have not, and that's okay. I probably have thought about the UFC one, to be honest. But Shea Serrano and Jason Concepcion from the Six Trophies podcast have. If you love basketball, and more importantly, if you love fun, you gotta listen to Six Trophies, where Jason and Shea serve up the biggest moments from all around the NBA with their brand of unbridled joy, banter, and pop culture side quests. Each week, they hand out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities. Stuff like the Denzel Washington and Training Day trophy, given out to the player or team having the best week around the NBA. Or the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy for the team or player that just can't get it together. plus a bunch more trophies for all the good, bad, or just plain head-scratching moments from all around the NBA. This playoff season, you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
We mentioned posters on the wall in the last segment. Do we still do that? Like, Stugatz, do your daughters have posters on the wall? Is Jessica the last generation that put posters on the wall?
Or was Jessica telling whoppers there?
My daughters do not have posters on their wall. No.
Because I did, and I believe Jessica, but I feel like that has, you know, not... I don't feel like
people...
Send you a picture of the wall. My old computer that I just found had a picture of my wall. It had a huge Derrick Rose poster, and I love Derrick Rose because my middle name is Rose, so I was like, oh, Rose, like... You know, I'm like all white girls. My middle name's Rose. And I also had a bunch of, I think I had like Didier Drogba, like a bunch of soccer players. I can't remember who else. And I had James
Harrison.
Too bad
that Mike stepped out of the room. You would have been swooning.
But are they making posters still? Like, when's the last time
That's
you saw
I'm
a
saying.
Poster and a piece of plastic wrapped up in a rubber band?
Yeah, there's like, always that one corner of like the end of the aisle in Walmart where all the sports stuff was.
Oh,
like
what about Spencer's?
Like box.
What about Spencer's? The old flipping through the posters at Spencer's.
Oh, I love flipping through those posters.
I think I got them all from sports magazines. And obviously, like, sports magazines aren't really... I think Sports Illustrated might actually be the last one.
Back in the day, when we used to go to the store to buy records, there was a place called Record World. And at the end, as you walked out, there was a big, big, big box of posters, of rock and roll posters, wrapped up in the plastic. Oh, it was great. I got a Grateful Dead poster there. I got a Neil Young poster there. Then I also got the Drive for Five poster. I didn't get it at Record World. I got that at Moe's. I got that one at Moe's. The Islanders were going for five straight Stanley Cups. And then, Jess, you'll be pretty impressed with this. I made my own poster. I took 12 Sports Illustrated covers, cut them out, and made a collage. How about that? I still have it till this day.
A collage of Sports Illustrated covers? Were they the swimsuit issue, or was there some swimsuit issue in there, or was it just athletes?
It was just athletes, no swimsuit.
Yo, chicken time!
Wait, what?
What'd you say?
It's like a turn!
What happened?
Whoa! Edward Sampson talked about as I swim today, too. You guys are both kind of weird.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Spencer's, huh, Chris? Spencer's?
Oh, Spencer's.
So what would you... You just like...
But like, yeah, you like flick through them and you stand there and there's like a line would build up because you don't want to be this like at the same time with this another person. So you go through all of them. You got to go through all of them.
Right.
And then this person takes place and replaces you.
But how old were you? You must have been pretty young.
This was teenagers. This is when the mom would drop you off at the mall with a couple friends. Oh, man, the mall. Remember the Oasis? I know that's a local thing down here, but... Yeah. Dropped off at the Oasis on a Friday night, maybe catch a movie, maybe just meander for a few
hours.
So it's
always a little
exciting time.
Always a little dangerous for a teenager to walk into a Spencer's. It's like there's some things that have the F word on it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a fart machine.
It felt illegal to walk into a Spencer's.
Put it on the poll, please. Did it feel illegal to walk into a Spencer's? I don't know why it is that it did feel that way, but it absolutely felt that way, unlike everything else at the mall. I don't know why it is that it felt that way. Stugatz, how do you feel about what you're seeing in the coverage today of popcorn being thrown at Russell Westbrook. He is limping off of the court. It is not quite as beautiful as the Coca-Cola commercial for Mean Joe Green, where he's limping off after a game and he's handed a soda. He's walking off. He's limping because he's hurt, and somebody throws popcorn at his head, and he's infuriated. He's enraged. The fan is probably very lucky, and the league is probably very lucky that there was that much security there, because that is not the person to do that to. He is already a hissing radiator at all times, and he's not going to abide your disrespect like that. He's not going to allow you to dehumanize him. So he gets popcorn thrown on him, and he's enraged.
Every right to be, man.
And it looked like, I'm not sure on this, but it looked like a Knicks fan courtside spit over 50 Cent to spit on Trae Young. And as America returns to normal, and as we have crowds and games that feel like you can hear the noise on your television, it feels a little more normal to be allowed back into these arenas, Stugatz, and to behave that way. We couldn't control ourselves a couple of days where you don't have an incident where your emotions get so frothy that at the point that you're not in the bubble anymore, we're going to throw popcorn on you, we're going to spit on you, and Kyrie Irving's going to have to do a press conference where he's worried about going back to Boston in this climate because he doesn't want to get bombarded with racism about exerting his rights as a player in the decade of empowerment that swallowed up Derrick Rose, learning at the knee of LeBron James. Kyrie Irving treated the Celtic fan base about as despicably as you can in a place where they believe in the mythology of sports and the team sacrifice and all that stuff that the Celtics imbued in this community. Kyrie Irving told them he was coming back, and then he betrayed them and left, and now he is doing the good things somewhere else. And the Boston Celtics have been ruined by that transaction, because right, wherever it is they thought they were going as a team, they have their very good reasons for having a great deal of hostility,
sure,
toward Kyrie Irving. But can they keep it out of the race boundaries is what he's merely asking for. Can you please just keep it out of the racial stuff?
Say what you want, just don't be racist.
Say what you want about what I did to your sports team as a player empowered, but the Boston Celtics represent a certain thing to that city, Stugatz. The Boston Celtics of Bill Russell, mm-hmm, who tells you that that city has an earned racist reputation, created hand down through generations an allegiance to their sports teams that Kyrie Irving in the decade of player empowerment didn't respect at all. And now he's going back with everything he did with his free agency and his power, and he's calling on them to be decent as human beings, to treat him with humanity, and he's calling on it as popcorn is thrown at Russell Westbrook, and it appears that someone spits on Trae Young.
Yeah, he's not going to get it. I mean, he's just not. Fans have been pent up. They've been sitting inside. They're finally allowed outside. They're allowed to go back to games. They've been holding a lot of stuff in, like they're going to be drinking. It's going to be...
Don't be racist, Boston. Look, we're not putting the bar very high for you, Boston. We're putting it as low as we can for you. Just don't be racist.
But I think LeBron made a very good point where if a player did what the fan did to Westbrook, there would be cameras. We would know who the player was. The player would get some sort of suspension. Something would have been done to the player. And I do believe if a fan takes things too far, racism is certainly one of those examples. Spitting on a player is certainly an example. Dumping popcorn on an injured player is certainly an example. Then there has to be something done to those fans. Those fans should not be allowed to come back to that arena.
You get ejected, and sometimes there are bans, and the penalties should have great consequences, because this needs to stop. Because the league, Stugatz, when it had fights on the court, yeah, during Knicks Heat, during that time where P.J. Brown is throwing Charlie Ward into the stands, once that got a little too uncomfortable for the white customer, fights that involve black dudes that feel different than fights in hockey that are received differently, white fans were made uncomfortable. And what happened next? all sorts of rule changes that sabotaged the Phoenix Suns because Amari Stoudemire took a step on a court, because there were grave consequences to your team if you got anywhere near the violence. The consequences need to be the same for those fans. Every fan needs to learn that if I spit on a player, or if I throw popcorn at a player, if I'm drinking or whatever the reason is, I'm not going to get off light on this. It's not going to be. Streakers don't get off light. Streakers actually have to go to jail, but I'm going to lose my sports allegiance. My team is going to punish me. It's the only way you eradicate it. Look at now, Stugatz. You're never afraid that there's going to be a real and actual basketball fight.
No.
You're never thinking no. on the court. You were always worried about that when Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning were playing, that fights often did break out. You're never worried about that. Why? Because of how hard they came down with the consequences. You got to treat the customer the same way, because you did that for the customer. You did that so the paying white customer would be more comfortable about things. When the media got in bed with basketball on the coverage, Stugatz, of the Malice at the Palace, you saw how the coverage changed in 12 hours at ESPN as the machine reversed. And from blaming the fans for throwing things, we started blaming, as a network and in sports, the players for causing a fight, because everybody became deeply uncomfortable. Dudes in cornrows with tattoos are punching the customers in the face. We can't have that on television.
I do kind of find interesting that probably now the incentive is almost not even as much punishment so much as kind of brand hits. I think athletes now are so savvy about how they're perceived, they don't want to be perceived as being fighters. But the interesting thing to me is we had two incidents in one night, and pre-pandemic, I can't remember this being a problem in this country. In world soccer, this has been a huge problem. Fan behavior has been a massive problem. But I feel like it had mostly been solved. Like, yeah, you hear, you know, of incidents in Boston in particular, but there weren't these kind of captured online social incidents of throwing food at players or spitting at players. And I do kind of wonder if post-pandemic, we almost kind of have to be re-socialized in a way.
That's interesting. It's an interesting. Can you be less barbarian because you've been locked in your house for a year and you don't know what social norms are anymore? I do wonder.
We're talking about Philly fans and Knicks fans.
I do wonder in terms of mental health and pandemic and craziness, like where it is. I don't know how much of it you can put on that, what percentage of it, but my guess is that the occasional person will behave crazy at an arena, given that our last year has been crazy.
I want to be clear about something. Everything that we have said and you have said, 1,000% correct. There is no excuse for some of the things that are being done at arenas. But I did kind of notice that Westbrook's ankle healed very, very quickly after the popcorn was dumped on him. I mean,
I don't want to make light of the last year, but putting what happened to Westbrook there in the perspective of the last year, when you see the video of the guy pouring his popcorn, it's like over that guy's face. It's not like he's like, oh, I'm just been having such a rough year. Take it, Russell Westbrook. And he's like pouring popcorn. So it's like tough that like, to we're turning this into like some serious thing. It's like just an idiot with popcorn. Like, can't it just be that?
I don't know. Like, there just haven't been that many idiots with popcorn in the last decade.
I think I'm with Chris on this. He probably wasn't thinking, you know.
Oh, it's been so hard,
Fauci. I'm so mad at Fauci.
Popcorn in your face.
Let me. I've had to wear a mask, and I didn't want to. My freedoms were taken away. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna throw popcorn at the second star on the eighth seeded Wizards.
Because I feel better now.
Gets injured.
It's medicine for me. You guys can have your vaccines, but he's hurt and walking back to the locker room, and this makes me feel better.
It was medicine for us. I wasn't limping anymore.
It was, actually. I would have done the opposite. I would have just opened my mouth, start catching popcorn.
I was just mad that food was being thrown away.
What a waste.
I don't want to try that guy, man. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reaction I anticipated from Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah.
He will get in your face and end you in 5 seconds. I'm serious.
Popcorn, underrated sports food.
Yes.
I love a good box of popcorn.
It's delightful. I was about to say, how is it underrated? I was going to say, it's properly rated. It's delightful.
Cheap.
What's your best sports food? It has to be nachos,
cheap.
Right?
Whoa. I'm not having cheap.
I'm saying, of cheap. All the items at a sporting event, it's you get it for like $6-7.
Have you been to a Marlins game post-pandemic?
No.
There's like a bag, like a snack bag of popcorn. It's less than you would get from like an Orville Redenbacher at Publix. and it's $7.50 at Marlowe's.
That's not that terrible for an item
$7?
Of food.
No, that's absurd. It's probably 21 cents worth of popcorn. The markup there is absurd.
Put it on the poll, please, at Le Batard Show. Are you enraged by the markup on popcorn at sporting
events? If you're not,
events?
You should be. And the movies as well. I don't know when I'm going to a movie again, but
that's ridiculous.
Next time I walk in, well, at least at the movie theater, you're getting a shed load of popcorn. And at the Marlins game, I got nothing for $7.50.
I love drinks at a movie theater. They're like $14 for a small, $14.25 for a medium, $14.75 for a large. So it's like, all right, I'm spending $14. I'm getting a large.
And the minimum amount you get is like 42 ounces. It's like the most American overdone amount of soda that has ever been.
What a great observation by Chris Cody that I have not thought about enough in my life, and it has been a movie theater scam the entirety of my life. They have always gotten that extra 50 cents from me because they're disorienting to me with what they're doing there mathematically. I don't even want more soda. It's plenty.
There's no incentive to buy the small.
There is no incentive to buy the small at a movie theater, and they know that, and they've been tricking me across 5 decades.
It's also like 400% of the daily value you should have of carbohydrates.
The drinks come with an undertow. You shouldn't have any of them. Like, clearly it's not the recommended amount, but it's only 50 cents more, and I can get more. I can get more. Why wouldn't I do that?
Pro move, get Twizzlers, use a Twizzler as a straw. Bite both ends of it.
Bite
both ends of the Twizzler. Though, yeah. And then you stick the Twizzler into the drink, boom, straw.
We're saving
turtles.
Okay. Straws don't cost anything. What is this a pro move for?
Just because you look like a baller. People look at you, they're like, this guy knows how
because
to do
it. Because there's
movie.
Not no, quite enough sugar in the drink already.
Twizzlers are terrible.
It's got an undertow for $14.75. You've got an entire vending machine of soda. You know, how do I make this slightly more unhealthy? I know. I'm going to help the environment by just drinking it with licorice.
Does your soda taste like Twizzler?
Oh,
after
it's a
that?
Little sweeter. It's delicious.
Really?
Even sweeter than Coca-Cola.
When you're in a movie, you need a little extra sweet.
But do you taste that flavor? Like, does Coke become a cherry Coke?
It does. I don't know about cherry, just a Twizzlery soda.
A hint of licorice. Yeah. There's a hint. A hint. I've got a hint of I'm saving the environment and straw.
Jessica gets it.
I just can't get over this popcorn thing, because what happens if you're eating popcorn at a sporting event or a movie theater and it gets stuck in your teeth and then you can't floss and you just have popcorn in your teeth for hours?
Floss? You just get it out with your tongue, you get your finger in there. Like, what are you talking about? Floss.
Get your finger in there.
Whoa, okay.
We're coming out the other side of a pandemic. You're just sticking your dirty fingers in your mouth at the movie theater?
We're back.
Jessica accusing others of being barbaric brings me to sound that I've wanted to play on the program today.
Teasing it.
This is a preview of a forthcoming episode of Mystery Crate. We got together and we recorded it yesterday. You'll hear it tomorrow wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me again ask the audience, by the way, as we've been in this period for several months now that's about to change on June 4th when we go into a different place and build something out with DraftKings. We need you again. We need to remind you again to please support the other properties around here. Mystery Crate, they're about to grow and be different, and we're excited about some of the things that we're going to do around here with new voices. And so we did one thing at ESPN, but we're headed into doing something different now. And so if you have not given these things a chance, I believe they're all about to improve, and Mystery Crate is going to have some stuff in it that you haven't heard before. So we ask you again to rate, subscribe, and review, whether it's the Le Batard and Friends Network, Mystery Crate, Stupidity, South Beach Sessions. We will have more coming your way. But we want to tell you about this as Whittingham sets up what this particular sound is in Mystery Crate.
Yeah, I would recommend the Le Batard and Friends Network feed. You get all of our network podcasts, Stupidity, Mystery Crate, South Beach Sessions, now the Jim Brockmeyer podcast as well. So we recorded on a bunch of topics, and Chris Cody brought up the subject of pre-cutting meat. Now, Jessica, of course, hard-hitting stuff you get on Mystery Crank.
Jessica. It's new and improved. We just got $50 million so that Mystery Crank can be stronger. And I went to Chris Cody, and I'm like, do you have an idea? And he's like, yeah. I've been waiting to unleash
pre-carved.
This. Didn't want to waste it on ESPN. Wanted to find freedom. And so I wanted to have a conversation about whether you pre-cut meat.
Now, listen, Billy Gill also shit on this topic yesterday as well. But it produced the following revelation from Jessica Smetana.
This is a little horrifying. I think I'm about to get exposed. I don't use knives.
What? Billy? See what kind of stuff we get from my
what
topic,
you
Billy?
Cut with
You're
spoon.
Welcome.
Why, Billy? What am I doing?
If I'm at a restaurant and I'm at a restaurant with John Skipper or, you know, people we work with, I will do the appropriate etiquette of cut it, eat it, whatever. But if I'm at a restaurant with just like my family or my friends, I'm just like ripping that baby apart with my teeth. I'm getting in there. I don't
what?
Get shit.
Wait, so you get an 18-ounce ribeye on a plate and you pick it up with your fork? That is absurd.
I mean, this is why we were given teeth, right? Just to
no.
Get that
hell yeah, Jessica.
That's
hell
also
yeah.
why we were given yeah. utensils.
Knives are so cumbersome. Like it's yes. such a waste of time.
Yes.
Waste of time
and dangerous.
Jessica, yes, did your did your descendants go through evolution, or are you a cave woman?
I might be. Or...
What, Billy?
Wait, forks? Yeah.
Well, yeah. You use the fork. You stab the middle of the piece of meat, and then you.
Yes. Oh, are you Fred Flintstone? Ah. You know Fred Flintstone, right?
A cave girl.
Fred who?
No.
Oh God.
I can't believe what I just heard for a number of different reasons. When she said, or when they said that she doesn't use knives, I started thinking, well, can you go through life just sort of cutting all of your food with a fork? Can you do it is what I imagined. I did not imagine her eating prime rib with her hands.
Sugats!
Like, I don't even understand how you eat like that. If you've got a filet mignon, you just start gnawing on it off the fork?
Jessica in the Zoom is showing photographic evidence of doing this with a T-bone steak.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.